Hey girl, hey, and thanks for dropping in to the Switch, Pivot, or Quit podcast. Candid convo for the girl needing a lifestyle plot twist when she's deciding if it's time to switch, pivot, or quit. I'm Ayana Angel, and I'm your host as well as chief encourager and author. If you're not already following us on Instagram where we always play, be sure to get down with us at Switch, Pivot, or Quit on IG. And don't miss out on our must reads over at switchpivotorquit.com. So since we officially like took the summer off from our book chat, book of the month series, today is pretty special because not only are we going to ease our way back into a good book next month, but today we have a treat. We are chatting with the author of Can We Talk? 10 Life Lessons on Finding Your Voice and Finding Yourself. So on today's show, we are going to be talking with communication expert, public speaking coach, award-winning educator, and newly published author, Amber L. Wright. Amber teaches entrepreneurs, professionals, and thought leaders how to say their words well, on and off stage. This dynamic woman presents at conferences and events across the country about the power of communication in shaping our lives from the boardroom to the bedroom. This amazing wife and mother finds time to juggle it all and has been featured in the media by Forbes, Mashable, Fast Company, Black Enterprise, and many more. In 2017, she released her debut book, Can We Talk? 10 Life Lessons on Finding Your Voice and Finding Yourself. And today, we're going to be finding out what's real when we talk to Amber L. Wright. Thank you so much for taking time out of your hectic schedule and joining us today, Amber. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for letting me hang out with you for a little bit.
Absolutely. So let's go ahead and start with you telling us a bit about your background and what led up to you becoming an author and sort of like adding that to your title.
Well, I have just always been a person who has had a way with words. Like ever since I was a kid, I've always been able to help people get out what they were trying to say. And I just feel like I'm really fortunate that I always say that my passion and my purpose are in alignment with my profession. Mm-hmm. So communication, and it's just been my calling like my whole life. And I love it. I love it. I love being a writer. I love being a coach. I love being able to do all the things that I'm able to do to still help people say their words well. And being an author or becoming an author was something that I've always wanted to do. And I I've had the dream for a really long time. And it was December of 2015 that I posted on Facebook, and I was like, all right, y'all, 2016 is it. This is going to be the year. I'm going to write my book. And all my friends were like, okay, girl, we're going to hold you accountable. And so I need to go back and actually find that actual date because I said that I was finally going to make this commitment. I was going to stop playing and just sit down and finally write this book that I had been on my heart to write for a long time. But I even mentioned in the introduction that I hadn't lived enough of life yet. I think I had to kind of go through some things to have something worthwhile to say. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad that I gave myself that grace to have those experiences, because I was able to write about them in a way that shows that I've grown and I've learned from that time, if that makes sense.
Absolutely.
And, I sat down and I was like, all right, 2016 is it. This is going to be the year. And I sat down and I made the commitment to do it. And I finally got it done.
Awesome. Awesome. And I've had a chance to read the book, just so you guys know, and you should definitely pick up your copy, especially if you are going through your switch, pivot, or quit moments right now. And I was actually telling Amber that if I were to write a book right now, it would certainly cover some of the topics that she covered and look similar in language to some of the things that she said. So you guys definitely want to pick this book up. So I want to find out from you. You had a book launch and it was so fantastic. We all witnessed it from social media and everything. And I just want to know, how has your experience been being an author thus far? Like, what does it feel like for you? What's the experience been like?
It feels really incredible. I mean, I'm not going to even lie. Just to be able to finally hold this product in my hand, to hold this book in my hand and see my face on the cover and be like, yo, I really did that. Mm-hmm. I feel like I'm still in disbelief a little bit, because it just was, like I said, a dream for so long. And the journey stressed me. as I'm sure you know, as an author, like, there's just nothing like it. There's really no experience like it. Yeah. And being on the other side of it, like right now, I'm just so excited to see how people are responding to it. Mm-hmm. And people are leaving reviews and they're emailing me and they're just like, Amber, you know, thank you for writing this. And I'm like, really? Are you right? Okay? You know,
my little words, you know.
Yeah. And so it feels really incredible. And mm-hmm. it, writing a book is like having a baby. Like, as soon as you have one, everyone's like, so when's the next one? It's like, wait a minute.
Yeah. Exactly. And they're going to be asking you that until you have the next one. I mean, I get asked all the time. So when's your next book coming out? And honestly, it doesn't matter how you feel. Okay. They're not worried about how you feel. They just enjoyed your first piece of work so much that they want to read more from you. And that's not a good thing. That's definitely a bad thing. But it's also crazy, because isn't it so personal too when you put your work out there to the world? Like, did you have any apprehension about sort of like finally releasing it and people having the book in their hands and reading your words?
Yes. Okay, yes. And how that came about is when I wrote the book and I completed the first draft, there's a woman named Julian Kiganda who basically, like, she helped me publish the book. She walked mm-hmm. me through the whole process. She designed the cover and she really helped me see this project through to completion. Okay. And I wouldn't have gotten done without her. And so I finished the book and I sent her the, you know, master draft. And she's like, Amber, this is good, but I feel like there's something missing. And I was like, what do you mean? She was like, you're so dynamic and you have like all this personality. And I don't feel like I'm picking up on that in the book. Like, why do you think that is? And I had to kind of let that marinate for a little bit, because I was like, this is magnificent. Like, what are you talking about?
Right.
And so I took a step back from the project, right? Because I was just so happy to be done with it. Mm-hmm. I mean, her first response was like, but there's something missing. I was like, what do you mean? So when I went back to the project and I read it with fresh eyes, I was like, oh, I see what she means. Mm-hmm. And what happened was I realized that I was restraining myself because I didn't know how to quite tell my story in a way that would villainize certain people in my life who I knew would read the book. And in doing that, though, I did myself a disservice, because I wasn't, not that I wasn't honest, but I wasn't fully free, right, to tell my story. Mm-hmm. So recognizing that, well, my story is mine, and I have to own it and tell it in my own way, and that just has to be that, right? As long as it's honest and it's not fabricated or exaggerated, then the thing plays out how it plays out. So when I went back and revised it, I was much happier. And so that's the version that you read is me taking my own voice off of mute and really not worrying about how people would respond to it, and just owning my own truth and telling my story in my own way and in my own words. Mm. And so I'm grateful to Julian for that feedback, because it was solid the way it was. Like, it wasn't a terrible thing, but it, you know, my true and authentic voice was kind of hiding a little bit. Mm. How that relates to your question is, I wasn't necessarily worried about the public, but just a certain amount of people, right?
Yeah.
And so once I went back and revised it in a way that was more true to my experiences, that then, you know, there's no shame, because this is what it is. This is my life, and these are the things that I've learned.
Right. Yeah, that's good. And I like how you say taking yourself off mute, because so many times I don't even think that we realize on a day-to-day basis how we put ourselves on mute when we're not sort of like honoring our true voice and saying and honoring our feelings and saying the things that we really want to say. So that is dope. So was there anything that you learned or encountered during the process or after the process that of releasing this book that was sort of like unexpected for you?
I think on a technical level, I learned that writing a book is not easy. And that's why everybody doesn't do it. Like, everybody has these dreams of doing it. But, you know, that whole idea behind, well, if it was easy, everybody would do it. And so on a technical level, like, just the editing process and the rounds of revisions and, like, always thinking, like, you're kind of done and then you're not still was a little frustrating. But, you know, that helped me to grow, I think, just as a business person. As a writer and as an author as well. On a emotional level, I became much more proud of myself. Like, cause you know, you just live your life, right? Like, you just get up, you do what you got to do, you go to work, you hustle, whatever. And you sometimes, I don't think we sit long enough to not necessarily just dwell in the past, but to reflect on it. And finishing this book and looking at all the things that I have done, I was like, you know, I've really been through a lot of stuff, and I'm really proud of myself for overcoming those things and building the life that I have, because I really wasn't given a good head start in life to be able to be where I'm at. So it was almost like my own little pat on the back to say, good job, girl. Like, you've done a lot and you should be proud. And the book is not even just really about me. It's about me using my story as examples on how I've been able to do certain things. But, on the emotional level, yeah, I'd have to say I just was really proud of myself and the things that I have made it through. And then just knowing that, like, I'm still really young, you know, like, there's still so much ahead of me. So that felt really good, and it was kind of unexpected.
Awesome.
Unexpected bonus.
Yeah. So as you know, on this podcast, we talk all about the switch, pivot, or quit experience. And, you know, I'd love for you to share, because I know you, but I'd love for you to share with our audience a bit about your own SPQ experience.
Ooh, I like that SPQ. I think I wanted to start by saying, as anybody that's listening, you're going to have many SPQ moments in your life, like many. There may be one that will be ultimately defining, but that's something that I'm appreciating about getting older and having certain experiences and doing a lot of things is like, man, you are going to keep turning corners, and that's a good thing.
Yeah.
So embrace that, I think, is my point. One that was really pivotal for me is one that I wrote about in the book and talking about how I had a job at a university that I had for 6 years, and I was a meeting and event services coordinator. And I loved that job. Like, when I got the job, it was my dream job at the time. And it was that until it wasn't. Like, after a while, I was just kind of tired. I was overworked. I didn't really feel like there was a lot of space for me to grow where I was. And I just was like, okay, I don't know how I'm going to keep doing this. Like, I feel like there has to be more. And I was also teaching at night, so I had two jobs. And then by late night, I was running my business. And at the time, I had a blog and I'd started my coaching practice and all this stuff. So I was really busy, and I was also stretched very thin. And I had a conversation with my mentor about how I had applied for a similar job at another university. And I didn't really want that job. I knew that I didn't, but I did it because I felt like that was what I was supposed to be doing. And she was like, well, girl, why? What do you really want to do? And it was just something about the way that she asked me that question. It just kind of shook me up a little bit. And I was like, you know, I don't want to do this. And so she was like, so then why? Why are you pursuing something that you know you don't really want? And it was at that moment where I was like, okay, I have a decision to make. Either I'm going to continue to stay here, not growing, unhappy, on an hour commute both ways, or I'm going to let my heart speak to me and follow my passion, which was at the time to teach more classes as an adjunct professor and to grow my business. And I didn't do it immediately because bills, you know, and I had to work out a plan. But I did leave. And that now has been 3 years since I left my full-time job, and I've never looked back. And mm-hmm. so that was a really monumental moment for me to say, okay, I'm going to take ownership of my dream mm-hmm. And run with it.
Right.
And you so know, that was a moment where I had to pivot.
Yeah. I want to talk about that a little bit more, because like, I know that I went through the same thing before I decided to sort of go out on my own and not even really realize I was going out on my own. Just because, you know, life growth, you now realize the impact of your decisions. But then it was just like, I need to make a move. But before I really got to that point where I needed to make a move, you touched on two things that are similar and I can totally relate. And I'm sure that others will relate and might be in this current situation. You got to a point where that job, you loved it when you first came in, but then you got to a point where you didn't and you needed an out. And for me, I know I stayed way too long to where that out just could not come fast enough. But in the meantime, I was also looking for similar positions. And a lot of us do that. And I don't know, and you chime in, but I think that maybe part of the reason we do that is because we either A, think we're only qualified to do what we've been doing, some version of mm-hmm. that, and we're scared that somebody won't take a chance on us, or we're not willing to take a chance on ourselves. Or maybe it's just that, you know, we're sort of like fearful that if we don't sort of do what we've been doing, other people will have something to say and judge us or whatever. Like, I don't know what it is, but so many of us do that, where our first recourse when we're deciding that we're not quite happy with our first, with our current position or current situation, is to get something similar. But why would mm-hmm. we do that if we know that we're not already happy there? Like, why?
Because we are programmed and conditioned to do what's right. Right? Mm-hmm. Like, there's this whole idea of, well, you know, you got to do the right thing. And sometimes the right thing to you isn't the right thing for you. And by that, I mean, really, you hit the nail on the head. A lot of it is fear, and a lot of it is a fear of judgment. And I see it all the time as a public speaking coach and professor, you know, people say, oh, I hate public speaking. Oh, my God. Blah, blah, blah. And they grumble about it. It's like, really what you're saying is I'm afraid of being judged. And there's no better way to put myself on a platter to be judged than to stand up in front of a group of strangers and talk. And that's really what it is. And so we do these things that we feel we should be. We have these like list of shoulds. To that, I say that on the other side of your fear, though, is the blessing, if you will, because to give it some context, I had to support my family during the recession. My husband lost his job. And so for 4 years, I had basically, like for three of the 4 years that he was out of work, I worked two jobs to support him. So I had my full-time job and I taught classes at night. And when it almost seemed so audacious of me to want to not have a full-time job. Because it's like, girl, are you crazy with these benefits? Like, what you mean? So that's what looked right and what felt right. Like, you should be doing this, Amber. You should have a full-time job. With all of these attachments to it or what have you. And so when I decided to leave and he got a job and then we started working on my exit plan because mm-hmm. mama was tired. I was ready to go. Mm-hmm. I went from having one class that I taught once a week at night at a local community college to four classes by the mm-hmm. following semester. Mm-hmm. So that provision was waiting for me on the other side of me embracing what I really wanted to do. Right. But if I didn't ever take that step, I would have never known that the provision was there. Mm-hmm. So I went from that one class to teaching four classes, making just about the same amount of money that I had in my full-time job. Mm-hmm. So I was still able to work, but have a much more flexible schedule. Mm-hmm. Be able to pick my kids up from school and all. Well, at the time I only had one, but to pick her up from school and all that. And, you know, that was the lesson for me.
Yeah. So, and sometimes we have to do it in our own way. So for those listening who are currently in that space, you have to figure out what works for you. You know, it's not going to be realistic that you'll hear anyone's story and be able to recreate that. It's just that you have to do what feels right for you. So
I'm so glad you said that. Please don't be like, that girl Amber on the Switch Pivot to Quit podcast. I'm going to quit my job because of her. No, 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 girl. Because you got bills to pay. Like, slow down. Think of your plan and then work your plan because your path is going to be different than mine. But the point here is to listen to your heart and just don't be afraid.
Mm-hmm.
But also be smart about it as well.
Yeah, exactly. So when did you start to realize that coaching was something that you were good at and maybe you should start to pursue it?
Man, that's a really good question. I think I know exactly when it was. I was already actively like in this coaching practice. Like I was already offering sessions, but I'm not gonna lie to you, girl. I didn't really know what I was doing when I first started. You know, I had no clue like how exactly it was going to work, but I was willing to give it a try. And so I started offering these sessions, and I was also very careful to only offer sessions that were in alignment with my credentials. So I have both of my degrees are in communication studies. So my master's is, I have a specialization in interpersonal communication. So I studied communication and relationships in grad school. And I taught my first class, my first college course in public speaking in 2009. So as I'm sure that you know, it's a lot of people out here on the internet selling wolf tickets to folks about what they can do for them and making these no credentials, no receipts, like no nothing. And so I was like, let me be clear that I'm not out here stretching myself or stretching the truth about what I can do for people. And to this day, I'm still very clear about that because I want people to have a realistic expectation about what I can do for them when they come to work with me. And I was also really active in the blogging community at the time. And I was a writer for BlackAndMarriedWithKids.com, which is like the leading website for black love, essentially, on the internet. And the owners, Lamar and Ronnie Tyler, they asked me to do a staff training for us staff writers, right? Because they had about 30 writers on staff all over the country. And so they were like, hey, Amber, you know, so we would have these like virtual trainings that they would do once a month. And they invited me to do a training on speaking for that group. And so I did that. And one of the writers came to me. She's a friend of mine now. Her name is Stacy. And Stacy was like, Amber, I took so many notes from your presentation. Like, I needed this information more than you know because I have a presentation coming up. And I was like so frantic and scared because I didn't know what I was going to do or how I was going to actually, like, public speaking is not my thing. So I didn't know what to do. And I really didn't know where to go to get help. So this training was right on time. And she had like two or three paid trainings within 30 days, like after that, because her confidence went up because I gave her the roadmap and the training on how to prepare. And that's when I was like, this is it. Like, people in this space who have online-based careers and jobs, and you know, there's a big boom with online entrepreneurship now. They don't necessarily know where. Not everybody went to college to have a public speaking class, or if they did go, they don't remember. They don't know how to actually write a speech or whatever. So that's when I knew that I really had something, not that just was viable, but that could absolutely help people. And so I decided to just kind of continue to press forward with that. And now my business has since evolved more into, I do more writing now than coaching, but I do still coach a small number of private clients, and I love it. I love when they have those moments where they're like, you gave me the foundation that I needed to get in front of this audience and tell my story. And, you know, that's just the best.
Yeah, it's definitely a really, really good and rewarding feeling when you feel like you made a difference for someone or you gave them tools that they can now use and move forward with. Now, with your book, Can We Talk? 10 Life Lessons on Finding Your Voice and Finding Yourself. In the first chapter, it's called Figure Out What You Want. And you talk about trying to determine your next move and facing the fear of what you really desire. Why was that an important place for you to start with this book?
That was really important for me to start with because I feel like that's the starting point. Nobody can help you get where you need to go or where you're trying to go if you don't know where you're trying to go. It all starts with us deciding what we really want. And that is the I don't know, common denominator to building a really happy, healthy life is deciding, trusting your gut, deciding what you want and then not being afraid to act on those things. Mm-hmm. Because you'll be a happier person just by default.
Right.
Right. Because no matter what we do, somebody's always going to have something to say.
Yeah.
So might as well do what makes me happy. Mm-hmm. But if I don't know what that is, then I'm only focusing on what the negative things are that people are saying. Right. Mm-hmm. And then we kind of get caught up in those cycles. So I wanted to, before you can have a relationship, a career, any of those things, you have to have an active practice of knowing what it is that you want so that way you can be prepared to go after those things. And also be able to articulate them. And that could be a variety of things to say, you know, I'm not okay with how you're talking to me right now. Mm-hmm. Do you want to lower your voice so we can start over? Right? Or I don't think that this is a good move for us as a business. So now you're speaking up in the meeting at work, right?
Right.
Because you're like, I don't really want to move forward with this project because these are the disadvantages that are going to happen to our department if we do it. Mm-hmm. So then now you kind of start looking at these aspects of your life where you speak up more because you're like, hey, I don't know that I'm okay with this, or I actually really love this. So let me also express that as well. Like, it influences the quality of our lives, how well we are able to communicate. Mm-hmm. So I really wanted to start the book with helping people understand that if you don't know what you want, then you're just going to be spinning your wheels and wasting your time and then wasting other people's time. And who has time to waste? Nobody.
Hello, exactly. And you mentioned that growing up, you were very dependent on like the opinions of other people. And mm-hmm. so many people are dealing with that right now, especially in like this social media culture that we live in, where it might not even be so much the opinions of other people, but it's knowing that other people are watching. And then sometimes if you're, let's say, popular enough, opinions on chiming in on what you post, what you do, what their perception is of your life. So talk to us about how you say, you know, that was your disadvantage, being dependent on other people's opinions. How did you sort of figure out that was a disadvantage for you? And what did you sort of do to work through that?
I realized that I didn't know how to trust my own judgment.
Hmm.
And I didn't like that feeling. I didn't really know how to think for myself.
Hmm.
So what I would do was I would ask everybody else, what do you think about this? What do you think I should do about this? Do you think I should do this? And, like, essentially looking for somebody to tell me what to do. And it's like, girl, you are grown. Like, I mean, I was so young. You know, I was in my early 20s. But I didn't like that feeling. And it's like, I talk about in that chapter about how a friend of mine was like, why do you tell everybody your business? And I was like, I don't know. Do I? And she was like, yeah, you ask everybody what they think about every aspect. Like, why do you do that? And I never stopped to think about that. And I realized it's because I didn't know how to think for myself, and I wasn't confident in my decision-making skill because there was never really an environment for me to make my own decisions, right? And that kind of carried on far longer than it should have. And so what happened as a result was me being dependent on other people's input about my life, who I was dating, where I was working, what I should do. And that's not healthy. And so once I kind of had that conversation with my friend, it just really got me thinking about, like, Amber, you are grown now. Like, you're on your own now, and you have to start making your own decisions and being okay with them, right or wrong, because nobody's here to save you. Like, you're all on your own, and it's time for you to figure some of these things out. But also know that you're capable of figuring these things out. You just have to trust yourself more.
Right.
And in doing that, that freed me up from really worrying about other people and what they thought. And then there was a huge epiphany for me. I think there's something about when you turn 30 that you just care a little less about what people think. And I was pregnant with my daughter when I turned 30, on my 30th birthday. I had her, my release in September, I had her in December. And so to have that dual experience at the same time, to kind of cross this threshold into this new chapter of my life, and then also have my whole world be, you know, turned upside down by becoming a mom, really made me care less about what people thought, because mm-hmm. now I had someone to care for, and I didn't have time to be worried about other people. So I really embraced that transition also in my life as a woman. to say, girl, I got this. Like, I'm good, you know? So I'm going to do what makes me happy, regardless of how you feel. And, you know, and how that plays out for people is, like, you'll plan, it'll be your birthday, and then you'll plan a birthday dinner, but you pick a restaurant that you think that everybody can afford or that is accessible for everyone, as opposed to you going to that one restaurant that you really want to go to. So instead of saying, hey, y'all, it's my birthday, we're going to turn up at this restaurant at this day and at this time. If you can come, great. If not, that's okay, too. Instead of doing that and then letting the people who can join you, you go to, like, Fridays, and there's nothing wrong with Fridays, if that's what you like, but you'll have a birthday dinner at Fridays, and you're not even really happy because it's not what you wanted in the first place, trying to appease other people. Like, so that's how it kind of shows up for us in different ways, and it's like, girl, you only get one shot at this, so do it how you want to do it.
Exactly.
And be good with it.
Exactly. And just getting in touch with yourself. And you mentioned that prayer, meditation, and self-reflection are all great tools to help one tap into their intuition. So can you talk a bit more about that and how those elements can play a useful role in making potentially a switch, pivot, or quit?
You know, there is power in the stillness. We're so busy. We're so busy. We're always on our phones, always running and gunning, always trying to figure out what's next, the hustle and bustle of life. And I get that. Like, I do. But I don't think we're still enough. It's why if you ever sit on, like, a plane or if you watch people in the airport or on public transportation, people go to sleep. It's because we're tired. We're tired. We don't sit still.
Yeah.
And so I have learned to, and I'm a doer. I am a doer. Like, I grind to the wheels fall off. Like, I'm very hardworking. And that's great, but there's no medal for being the, like, hardest working person. Like, what does that do if I'm all frazzled and frayed and all over the place? Like, I'm no good to anybody if I'm all stressed out all the time. And so if you are in a moment or you're at a crossroad where you are switching, pivoting, or approaching something that you want to quit, a job, a relationship, or whatever, you got to get still, because that's the only way that you can really hear your inside voice, right? The only way you can really hear your intuition and what your heart is saying to do in your mind, like the only way that those, your heart, your mind, and your body and your spirit can get in alignment is you just shutting up and just like sit down somewhere and be quiet.
Right.
And for me, that comes through times of prayer, and I have like a meditation app on my phone, and I'm not going to even pretend like I'd be sitting here with my legs crossed every morning, you know, before the sunrise. Like, I don't, that's not, you know, how I get down. But I have embraced those things as a part of my life, and they help me in my self-care. And, you know, when there's times when I know that I have a decision I need to make, I have to go inward, because only I can, like we were saying just a second ago, only I can make these decisions for me. And I love it. I love the benefit of having this type of practice that allows me to really reflect on what it is that I truly want to do. And I know that I said a second ago, like, oh, you know, I used to ask my friends and stuff all the time what they thought. I also talk about in the book, though, how it is important to have people in your life that you trust, that you can go to for insight. But how I want you to approach it is get solo first, go inward first, and then decide what your heart is saying. And then when you hit up your girlfriend, be like, all right, Suze, this is a decision that I'm thinking about making. This is what my heart is telling me to do. Do you have any insight to offer me on how you think that I should proceed? Right. So I'm not asking you to tell me what to do, but maybe you've had a similar experience, and then she can say, oh yeah, girl, I've been through that before, and this is what worked for me. And then that helps you to make a more informed decision. But having an element, a spiritual element in my life has been priceless in doing what I've done and then going where I'm going.
And I like how you say, you know, come to this person, this trusted person in your life, with a sense of sort of already knowing what the landscape is of what you're trying to contemplate, decide on, whatever, but then asking them, do they have any insight? Because that's a key thing. There's some people that will tell you all day long what to do and how to do it, but they have not done it themselves. And I know that there's a popular thing that goes around social media where it's like, oh, you know, don't take advice from somebody who's never built anything or whatever, something to that effect. And that's so true, because a lot of times people are quick to give their opinion or give their feedback or their advice, but they haven't actually walked in that space before. They haven't actually touched on those areas that you're trying to touch on, or haven't had to be faced with the decisions that maybe you're trying to make. So when you ask a question and you frame it in that way, then it's like a little bit more controlled, I feel like, what their response will be. Because the reality is, do you have any insight in this area or not? And you know, and if you can straight up say, no, I don't, okay, well, maybe you're not the person I need to be talking to then. You know, and not in a rude way and not in a mean way, just in a way that you help to further bring clarity for yourself and not more confusion. Because if you talk to someone that doesn't have that experience in that area, they may then just bring up other things for you to think about and for you to consider that are not even relevant. It may feel relevant to you, but it's not. You know, so I like the way you position that, because it's not to say that you don't need to seek other people's counsel at times. It should just be strategic about how you do it, and don't just do it all the time and for any and everything. Be very smart about it, I guess you could say. So I like that.
Yeah, because we all have friends who offer different things to us. There's one girlfriend, you know, you could talk to about your marriage if you're married, or your relationship, right? There's one you can talk to about your career. There's one you could talk to about your drama with your mom. Like, you know, she's been there. So it kind of does help you be more selective about who you share your life with, like literally who you share your life with. So then that way you're getting that wise counsel, as opposed to, girl, hey, trifling, you should, okay, wait. You know, are you projecting here? Or are you really listening to what's going on with me? And can you offer advice without, like, substituting my life for yours? And so we do that. And I think it is important to, you know, have a good, solid group of people around you.
Mm-hmm. In your opinion, what role, speaking of careers, what role does personal development play in a person's quest for a successful professional life?
Everything. for the same reason that we were talking about a moment ago, like with me and applying for jobs that I was qualified for, but I didn't really want, right? These are symptoms of me as a person and my personal development being lacking, right? Because I really wasn't embracing my fullest potential, or giving myself the opportunity to embrace my fullest potential, because I was traveling the safe route. And so I think until you know you, again, nobody can help you. And there are people who want to help you get where you want to go. But I can't do that if you don't have an idea. Like when I worked in higher ed and student affairs, I had a lot of young women who I mentored. And this one woman in particular, she asked me, oh, Miss Amber, I would love it if you would be my mentor, because she saw that I had mentored somebody else, right? And she saw us going to lunch sometimes in the cafeteria on campus and all that. And so she wasn't prepared, though, when she sat in my office and was like, I want you to be my mentor. And I said, what? How do you think that I can help you? And she was like, oh, well, I mean, because okay. So you haven't thought about that. This is my time that I'm going to share with you. And I want to see you succeed, and I want to see you reach your goals. But if you don't know what those goals are, then I can't help you. And she was really, like, astounded, you know. And I was like, I don't know what part of the game you thought this was, but, like, I want to help you, but you got to first you want to help yourself and kind of know what type of help you need. And that's a personal development thing for me, to kind of say, like, okay, who am I as a person? What are my strengths? What are my weaknesses, and how can I contribute them to this career, to this business, to my own business, whatever, you know? So I think that it's really, really important. You have to know yourself. So then that way you can then be able to articulate, like, I'm really good at communication, right? So, like, if you're in an office environment, then you volunteer to write the newsletter for the department. because you know, like, that's your jam.
Right.
But if you don't know that about yourself, then you can't mention that. And then now you're mad at your job because they don't give opportunities for you to grow, but you have this skill set that you don't even want to tell nobody about.
Right. Yeah, that's true. And I want to ask you this because I think this could be really helpful for some people. And we've touched on a few pieces of this, you know, communication playing a role in a person's career, even from the perspective of not being able to or not speaking up because you haven't found your voice or you don't feel comfortable yet or whatever, just getting to a place where you do feel comfortable about those things. And then just like you just said as well, you know, offering your skill set because you know what you want and you know that, hey, I'm a person that can execute this. So what are some of the key tips maybe to better communicating with your manager or employer if you're in a sort of like a corporate 9-to-5 situation, or maybe even your audience if you're like someone who's like an online entrepreneur, solopreneur, or whatever? What are some key tips to maybe better communicating with your audience?
I definitely think honesty and tact are important.
Mm-hmm.
And what I mean by that is you've got to get honest with yourself first. So if honesty, tact, and facts, I think is what I would say. Mm-hmm. For example, a lot of scenarios that I've heard and seen is I want to raise in a traditional like office environment, right? I want to raise. Okay. I had a student in the spring semester. She asked me for advice on how she should handle that at her job. And she's like, oh, Miss Amber, I need a raise because I'm doing all this stuff. I'm like, all of what stuff? And she's like, well, just stuff. I mean, I'm doing all this. I said, okay, slow down. And you need to get a paper and a pen. And you need to be able to list what these things are that you are doing that you feel like you are not getting paid for. Because if you go into your boss's office and you're like, pay me. Mm-hmm. He's going to be like, why?
Mm-hmm.
So you need to be able to be prepared to say, these are the contributions that I am making to this department that are beyond my original job description.
Right.
And she blew her mind to think about, oh, okay, maybe I should have that in advance. And so that is, so there's a way to kind of, I call it finessing, right? Where you finesse a conversation in a way that, you let people know that you're serious, you let people know that you're honest and you're upfront, but you're still tactful and professional about it. I think sometimes we just lead with our emotions when we're having conversations and that's, there's nothing wrong with that, but I think there's just time, place, and manner for everything. So if you are in a work situation, even if, and I think my best advice would be to practice the positive things first. So, for example, if your boss does something that you actually really like, they did support you at a meeting or something, go to them, write them a thank you card or something, communicate with them and say, you know, thank you for looking out for me in the staff meeting earlier today. That made me feel supported in this work environment.
Mm-hmm.
How do you think that boss is going to feel, right? Ideally, they would be like, you know what? I appreciate you letting me know that because now they know that, hey, I've done it because bosses catch a lot of flack and sometimes they deserve it, but sometimes it's good to just also encourage that positive behavior so they can continue to do it. And what that does is build a positive climate in your work environment. So then when something goes wrong, then it's not so much of a stretch for you to go in there and say, hey, you know, boss, I didn't feel so good the other day when you talked to me the way you did in the meeting.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, the conversations are more fluid because you've made an effort, even in just and also in the positive ways to communicate things. Because so often we just focus on why we're unhappy, and it's like your job is not there to make you happy. That's your job,
mm-hmm.
and it's your responsibility. So, say you don't work in a traditional work environment, you have your own business online. I think authenticity is important when it comes to the way that you communicate online. People want to know that you are a real person. Now, that doesn't mean that you have to tell them all of your business. Right. Mm-hmm. But I think people like, you know, the whole know, like, and trust factor is true when it comes to online based business. And the same communication and conversation practices that work offline work online as well. Be respectful, be kind, and be consistent.
Mm-hmm.
And just be yourself. Like, you don't have to worry about what the next woman is doing on her Instagram.
Right.
You know, you focus on yours and the people who are already following you. And I think that that comes through in online-based environments where we have businesses online. Like, you know, connect with people, email them, reach out to them. Don't just reach out when you need something. That's terrible. That is so tacky. Mm-hmm. When I only hear from you because you need something.
Right.
You know, ask people how they're doing. Like, all those types of same communication practices that you would do in a work environment or an office environment are true, even if you're working from your laptop at home by yourself.
Right, right. Yep, that's true. So I know that we all go through it. And when I say it, meaning everything. And when you had some of your most, like, let's say, trying days and just trying to keep your head up and move forward, what's some of the things that you would do or say to yourself to keep yourself going?
Remembering why I got started in the first place. I think everybody has their own, like, definition of success.
Mm-hmm.
And I know what mine is. And I always fall back to that when I feel like, God, this stuff is hard. Because, listen, the truth is entrepreneurship is really hard.
Yeah.
It's very challenging. It's a lot. And but there's this trade, though, right? Like, we trade the stress for the freedom and the feeling of being in control of our lives, or kind of just like steering our ships in the way that we want them to go. So remembering that, and maybe we can get into that at another time or in another question about like how I define success, but remembering that is what keeps me going. And sometimes when we ask for things, and so like I'm Christian, right? And so I'll pray and I'll ask God for something and it'll come, and it's like, oh, whoa. You know, there's a scripture in the Bible where it talks about, like, when you give and you pour your tithes into the storehouse, I'll pour you out a blessing, basically, like, so much that you can't contain it.
Mm.
And that happened to me. I had one of those, like, windfall kind of blessings earlier this year where people were in my inbox left and right, like, clamoring almost to work with me. And for a moment, I was really overburdened by that because it was so much at one time, and I just wasn't prepared for that.
Mm-hmm.
And it gave me the visual of what it looks like. When something is overflowing, it's really messy. You got to clean up. You got to find buckets. Like if it's a water hose or something, you're trying to like stop the water from gushing out, right? And even if that's the water that you asked for because it was a drought, like so you need the water, but it's like overflowing. You're trying to figure out how to contain it. I realized in that moment, like, man, you really got to be prepared for what you ask for.
Mm-hmm.
And remembering that this is what I asked for. So the times when I do feel overloaded or I'm stressed out or I feel like I'm behind on my to-do list or whatever, and it's like, Amber, this is what you asked for. The alternative could be something completely different where ain't nobody checking for you at all.
Right.
You know? And so that helps me to stay grateful. And gratitude to me is like an access key to peace. And it helps me to calm down and remember, like, girl, you're good. Like, if you have, I got a warm bed sleeping at night. I got a husband who loves me who come home. I ain't got to be out here chasing him. You know what I'm saying? Like, he want to be here. We got two good kids. We have food to eat. I have clothes to wear. Like, I'm blessed. And so kind of going back to those really basic things helped me to keep things in perspective and continue to do what I'm doing and continue to move forward.
Okay. And actually, it's so funny that you mentioned it, because what does success mean or look like for you? That is a question. So go ahead and answer that.
And I didn't say because I didn't know. Like, well, you know, she might ask that. My definition of success is that I'm able to pay my bills easily and on time. That I am able to be mentally, physically, emotionally, and financially present for my children. That I'm able to enjoy experiences with my family and travel without scouring the internet for the best price, because you know how that goes, right? Like you're on orbit and then you're searching and comparing and you go directly to the carrier. You're like, oh my God, I'm trying to get this discount. Then you're flying at like 2 o'clock in the morning, you know, like just to get a deal. So can I have these experiences? And that could be just earlier in the summer, me and my family, we spent the night at a hotel in Burbank. Like, that ain't but 40 minutes away from here, but it was new to us. And it was, you know, my little girl, she don't care. She like, it's a pool. We gonna go swimming. That I'm able to have, like, experiences with them and be able to afford them. But I'm also able to be a blessing to other people. That's really important to me. And that I have control of my time.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I define success. That I get to say, like, where, how I want to spend my day. Mm-hmm. And however those things play out in my life, I'm good with. As long as I feel like they're happening, then I feel like I'm successful. And that definition really has not changed, like, over the last 5 or 6 years, because it speaks to the things that are most important to me and the things that I really value. So that means I got to really be worried about the next shit. And sometimes we're tempted to do that because we're human, you know. Mm-hmm. We're like, oh, dang, like, oh, she popping. Like, all these things are happening. But I just remember, but I'm successful too,
mm-hmm.
in my own way and on my own terms. And that's really encouraging. So I want to encourage your listeners to take the time to define what success looks like for you and your life, and let that definition lead you.
There you go. Now, have you figured out your why? And if so, and your why in life? And if so, can you share it with us?
You know what? I feel like I have.
And it could be changing. It could be evolving.
I just feel like it's really abstract, though. And a friend of mine said this to me just, I think it was like on Friday, because I posted on Facebook about how, like, all these amazing things are happening for me right now. And it's really blowing my mind.
Mm-hmm.
And she said to me, oh, man, I feel like it almost wants to make me cry just thinking about it. She said, Amber, you are leaving your gift here. And that's why you are experiencing all these blessings and all these wonderful things happening. Not only do you deserve them, but you are leaving your gift here. Like, when you leave this place, there won't be anything that you kept to yourself. And that's why people respond to you in the way that they do. And that was so profound for me, right?
Yeah.
I was like, girl. And she's known me for a long time. You know, like, mm-hmm. we used to work together at that same job that I had that I wanted to leave. So she's been able to see my trajectory and where it's gone. And so I really value her opinion. And that just really touched my soul. And mm-hmm. I think that is a way for me to define what my why is. It is to do that. It is to leave my gifts here. And I've always said that, like, everything that I do is, we all have a gift and a talent and a special ability that is uniquely our own. Mm-hmm. And it's our job. I think that it's totally fine to build your livelihood off of that gift.
Yeah.
Because that's what makes us feel happy and fulfilled, when you know that you're operating. And because I always tell people, your gift is somebody else's struggle.
Hmm.
So you could spend your whole life freeing up other people from a struggle mm-hmm. by just doing what you're naturally good at. I'm naturally good at words.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm able to make a living exercising and operating in that gift.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's my why. My why is to do all that I can to relieve somebody else's struggle and to make their life a little bit easier doing what I'm naturally inclined to do.
Mm-hmm. And you've been doing that beautifully. And in the book, you talk about goal setting. And I think that, and I mentioned to you that I like the way that the book is structured, because it not only identifies problems or issues or things that you may bump up against in life, but it also gives you some tools and some ways to sort of navigate through these things. And it's not this long, drawn out version of things, you guys. She doesn't spend half the book identifying potential issues or problems, okay? We all know those books where you're like, okay, I know what the problem is, because that's why I'm reading this book. Like, hello, now I just need the solution, the tools, whatever it is that you're supposed to give me to help me navigate my way through it. So, and on the podcast, actually, I recently talked about goal setting and how to achieve your goals. And your book talks about goals as well. So would you mind sharing with us some of your tips regarding goals?
Yeah, I would love to. Goal setting is really important to me mm-hmm. because I learned the power of goal setting in my mid-20s. And what I've learned from that is that it's very important to write your goals down. So one, I think it's important, I think I would say, to really just, again, just reiterating this theme of deciding what you want, just write it down. right? And even if it's really outlandish or it sounds crazy, just take the time to really say, okay, I want this to happen. And so an example in the book is if you say, all right, I want to lose 10 pounds. Okay, awesome. How then are you going to do that? Right. Because the goal by itself is just that. Like, you need tasks in order to help you achieve that.
Action.
So breaking it down, I would say, one, just kind of like decide where you want to be, decide what you want your life to look like. And underneath that, I would say like a sub point would be to then write it down. And how you write it down could come out, and you could keep a journal. You could do a vision board. You could like an actual card, you know, poster board, you know, and vision board parties are all the rage now. Like, everybody does that, and, you know, they're fun. So, you know, find a vision board party in January, because there's going to be a gang of them for you to go to.
Right.
And sit down and say, okay, let me kind of actually like literally visualize what I want to do. And then thirdly, just get to work.
Hmm.
Get to work, because it's not going to happen by itself.
Mm-hmm.
It's not. And one, it's not going to happen by itself. And two, it's not going to happen exactly the way you think it is either. And I think sometimes we have to like let go of all of these expectations about how our lives are supposed to be. Your job is the do. I posted this on Instagram just the other day. Your job is the do. God's job is the how.
Hmm.
So once you decide what you want, you want to start a podcast? Okay, great. Did you do your research? Who's the podcast going to be for?
Right.
Where are you going to post it? Are you going to do any help? Are you going to do it by yourself? Like, there's all these things that will come up for you that will almost encourage you not to keep going. So that's why you have to be committed to saying, like, I want to do this for this reason. Like, I love that you asked me what my why is, because I think a lot of people don't know why they want to do certain things.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would say those really simple tips is like kind of get the vision, then write the vision down, and then act on the vision. Mm-hmm. And I promise you, you will see a change, but you got to just like stay with it and stick with it and keep going.
So if you guys haven't figured out by now, Amber and I know each other pretty well, and we actually know each other from our college days, and she is one of those genuine people that truly wants to see other people win and succeed, and she's always super supportive. She's one of those people that I talk to on a pretty regular basis, and so Amber, I want to know from you, why is women supporting women important to you?
Because you can't do it by yourself.
Hmm. Yeah.
And if you're doing, and if you're trying to, girl, stop.
Yeah.
Stop. You can't.
Just stop.
Just cut it out. Like, it ain't even nothing more. You know what I'm saying? Like, I feel we really have this, like, oh, I got it. And you want to, you know, engage in this performance. Mm-hmm. To show the world, like, that you got it. But you might have it for a while, you know?
Right.
But at some point, you're going to need somebody to cry to talk to share with. When I think about the most pivotal moments in my career where there was a switch, a pivot, or I had to quit doing something, or the moments where I advanced to another level, it was because someone mentioned my name to somebody else. And it's very important to me, especially with women, and particularly with Black women, that we look out, because, you know, the whole idea that we all we got is true. It's the truth. We all we got. And I think there's nothing more powerful than you supporting another woman on her journey and encouraging her to and helping her shine a little bit brighter, knowing that her light is not going to dim yours. Like, there's just nothing greater than that. And I feel like we all can go far together. And that's one of the things that I'm really grateful for in having you as a friend, because you're always so motivating. Yeah, I remember one time, I think when I was in the process of writing the book, I was like, oh, I'm so tired. And I just feel like, you're like, well, quitting is not an option. We're not doing that. So
right.
Just keep going. And, you know, you need somebody to call you on your shit sometimes. Like, you need somebody to be like, also, though, girl, you got this. Like, keep going. You need someone who's going to listen to you when you are feeling stressed and you want to cry. And you're feeling, because those things are natural and they're normal and they're part of the journey. And when you have someone on the journey with you, then, again, we all go farther together. And so I happen to work with a lot of clients who run their own businesses and they're entrepreneurs. And so they'll hire me to do some writing work for them. And then I'll turn around, girl, I got all kinds of soaps and hair products and t-shirts mm-hmm. and things that I've bought to support these other women who are on their journeys too, because I also feel like it can't be one-sided either, that like, oh yeah, all the clients can come to me, but like I'm not also in my own way, however I can, investing back in them as well.
Right.
And there's just nothing but beauty that comes on the other side of women supporting women, I feel.
Mm. Well, I can't think of a better way to close the show. That is awesome. Now, Amber, tell our listeners how they can keep up with you, where they can get a copy of your book, all that good stuff.
Well, I am on the book, The Bird and the Gram at Talk to Amber. So you can find me on all three of those platforms at Talk to Amber. I am most active on Instagram, so come holler at your girl and say hi. Mm-hmm. My website is talktoamber.com. I make it really easy for people to find me.
Exactly.
And on my website is where you can learn anything that you wanted to know about me, on my About Me page, what I do, the nature of my work, how I can help you if you are interested in working with me. And also, that's where you can buy a copy of my book. It is available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble, so you can search on either of those platforms, or you can just go directly to my website. There's a book tab, you can click there, and on the homepage as well, and click order your copy. It'll take you directly to Amazon, so you can order there. So it's called Can We Talk, and I want to talk to you. So let's out.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you so much for joining us today. Thanks for spending time. Thanks for chatting. Thanks for dropping all your gems and your wisdom about life and everything else on us. And absolutely appreciate you as always in real life and on the podcast. We'll all be looking out for more amazingness to come from you. Thank you, Amber. And as always, you guys, keep killing it.